This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. Hope you're well.
Boker Tov. A bit of drama over the Mediterranean yesterday. Goodness me, there was quite a story which involved a Polish Airlines flight that was traveling from Warsaw towards Tel Aviv, operated actually by a Bulgarian company. But the flight was traveling towards Tel Aviv when an emergency security code was activated on the plane, which indicated that security code indicates that there's a hijacking. And then communication was lost with the aeroplane, and two Israeli Air Force jets were immediately scrambled towards this flight. Eventually, contact was re-established with the plane, and the captain was relaying a message that everything was okay, and that apparently the security code had been accidentally activated, either through some sort of a technical fault or through some sort of human error, but everything was okay. The problem is that when the security forces receive everything's okay from a plane where a security code has been activated, they don't necessarily believe that everything was okay, because there's always the possibility that whoever is on that plane causing trouble might be forcing the captain to send a false message that everything's okay, when in fact it's not okay. So the plane was forced to land in Cyprus, and everybody was disembarked from the plane and was put on another plane. What I gather is that everything seems to be okay, but there's nothing like a little bit of drama.
Well, especially at the moment. I mean, everybody is so stressed and hyper-vigilant, so it's really not surprising.
Absolutely. And, of course, the Maccabi Games begins tonight at the Teddy Stadium in Jerusalem. 8,000 Jewish sportsmen and women are expected to participate in more than 40 sports over the next few weeks. Very, very exciting. I think it should be exciting as well for people in the diaspora to follow what's happening. And of course, a great coming together. It's one of the really massive sports events globally, with more than 8,000 sports people participating. So if you're participating, if somebody that you know is participating, good luck. We hope that it will be conducted in a very, very sportsmanlike way. All the competitions and, of course, new friendships will be forged, and we'll feel this unity which we really need right now.
Absolutely. Prime Minister Netanyahu yesterday visited IDF troops in southern Lebanon. That's in the security zone. Significance of the visit?
Yeah, I think it's very significant, because there's nothing like photo opportunities of the Prime Minister and members of his cabinet surrounded by the senior IDF brass, the senior generals, and ordinary troops serving in a foreign country. All of that taking place in a foreign country and within a war zone. The Prime Minister presented himself, the pictures that show him standing up and addressing the gathering. And he's not wearing a flak jacket, and he's not wearing a helmet, and he doesn't seem to be personally protected in any way, even though other people who are around him all are wearing flak jackets. And I'm guessing he may well have a bulletproof vest on or something like that underneath. But certainly to the naked eye, he seems almost entirely unprotected personally. And I think that these are very, very strong images that get sent out showing first of all, to the residents of northern Israel, that the prime minister feels comfortable going not only to the north of Israel, but across the border into the security zone in Lebanon without, you know, with impunity and without being concerned for his personal safety. Clearly, many, many precautions were taken in order to protect him. One has no doubt about that. But I think it's a very, very strong statement. And I think it's also a strong statement for people around the world to see that we have managed to create a situation in southern Lebanon which makes it completely safe and possible for the prime minister just to wing himself in there, to address the troops, to do an assessment, to address issues that he wishes to address, and of course to send important messages to our troops who are serving there and have served for so long and who are doing a really great job of cleaning out that area to somehow bring a little bit of peace and security to our northern border. And of course, he mentioned the peace agreement that had been signed with Lebanon, and he mentioned to the IDF troops that the work they had been doing and are still doing in southern Lebanon has created the platform to allow Israel to enter into this peace agreement. And I think that that's a really critical statement to make, to draw a clear connection between the military operation, which is not an end in itself, but it is a means to an end. And the end is a peace agreement with Lebanon, which has been facilitated by the military operation to clean out Hezbollah. We understand that something like 9,000 Hezbollah terrorists have been killed in Israel's operations in southern Lebanon. And of course, removing the link or weakening the link between Hezbollah and Iran. By the way, Hezbollah was considered to be Iran's most strategic proxy army in the region. And the prime minister mentioned that at one point there were something like 150,000 missiles that were located in that southern Lebanon area. He referred to it as the most densely missiled area on the planet at one point. But that now, even though there are only less than 10% of those missiles still remaining, they still present a significant threat to Israel. So I think all of these messages are really critical. Clearly, the prime minister wanted to send a message not only to the people in northern Israel, to people around the world, to the Lebanese government who recently signed an agreement with Israel, to Hezbollah, to Iran, but also, perhaps most importantly, to Israel's electorate, because the campaign has started in earnest, and we are definitely heading headlong into a very, very serious election campaign, and there's no doubt that this is part of it.
The Knesset will vote next week, and that is to recognize the Armenian genocide. Why is this important? Why is this a focus?
Well, the whole issue of the Armenian genocide really ties in very, very closely to our relationship with Turkey, because, of course, the Armenian genocide is documented, well-documented, to have taken place around the time of the end of the Ottoman Empire. So in the early 20th century, just towards the end of the period of the First World War, when literally millions of Armenians were killed over a period of about 8 years. And the Turks have always denied this. They claim that they don't deny the number of people who were killed, but they do deny the fact that it was as a result of a Turkish genocide that these people were killed. They claim that the killings were down to various other things, inter-tribal conflicts and things like that. But ultimately, there were millions of people killed in Armenia at that time. And the Israeli cabinet met yesterday in order to approve recognition of the Armenian genocide. And Foreign Minister Gideon Saar said that it's important for us as Jews to somehow show our sympathy and to show our recognition of a genocide of this sort. Of course, the background to all of this is an increasingly alarming relationship and an increasingly deteriorating relationship that we have with Turkey. And it's probably worth just taking a moment to think about what's going on in Turkey, because immediately that the Israeli cabinet approved recognition of this genocide and the fact that it will be taken to the Knesset for a vote, President Erdogan of Turkey immediately condemned Israel's decision to formally recognize the genocide, and then, of course, accused Israel of trying to deflect attention away from the war in Gaza, which, of course, is also being billed as a genocide, although the number of people who have been killed in Gaza pales into insignificance when one has compares that to the 1.5 million Armenians who were killed during the period of the Ottoman Empire. And also when one understands that of the people killed in Gaza, a very high proportion were actually terrorists, military operators, people involved in the war rather than innocent civilians, I think that one understands that we can't really compare the two. But our relationship with Turkey is highly problematic. And we know that Turkey has been siding more closely with Iran and with the Islamic extremist side of the equation. And the military side of the relationship, there have been threats that Turkey might wish to get militarily involved in some of the things that Israel is doing, particularly in Syria and elsewhere. And we just need to understand that any military conflict with Turkey becomes enormously problematic. And the reason for that is not because we fear Turkey and the Turkish army, which I have little doubt we would be able to take on if that was necessary. But the problem, of course, is that Turkey is a member of NATO. And the moment you conduct a military operation against a member of NATO, then you potentially activate all members of NATO, because this NATO Clause 5 states that an armed attack against any one or more of its members in Europe or North America is considered to be an attack against all members of NATO, including the United States and most Western European countries. So if Israel carried out a military operation against Turkey, which seems to be something that could get closer and closer with every passing day, then we potentially have to think about NATO Clause 5, Article 5, and what that really means, bringing all members of NATO into play. So I don't foresee any military operation against Turkey, even though some people might think it might be a good idea to clean things out with Turkey. But we wouldn't want to come up against NATO, not because we fear the forces of NATO, but because most of the members of NATO are really allies of Israel in one way, shape or form, particularly the United States. And we wouldn't want that to happen. And it's interesting how the international diplomacy platform has changed so significantly, because when NATO was originally put together, this was sort of a group of countries trying to band together in order to protect themselves against Russian aggression. And Turkey is a critical member of NATO from that perspective because of its location near to Russia, on the Black Sea, controlling also the Bosphorus, which is the entrance and the exit to the Black Sea, where Russia has a significant naval force, and Turkey potentially controls that critical waterway, and also has a very close access to Russia across the border, across the waters of the Black Sea. But now we are seeing a slightly different constellation in international diplomacy, where we've got the Islamic extremist groups forming an alliance. That's Iran, potentially Iraq, and Turkey is being drawn into this. So Turkey is very much a potential problem for NATO. We saw President Trump, for example, calling upon NATO countries to help in the war against Iran. It was pretty clear that Turkey wasn't going to get involved in that. But it is certainly very complicated with Turkey. And I think that this decision to recognize the Armenian genocide is just one of the ways that Israel is somehow finding a voice to
nudge them
oppose
a little
Turkey.
Bit.
Yeah, to stand up to Turkey and to say, listen, you can shout from the rooftops about a genocide, but you know, you have something in your own backyard which you can't deny. And ironically, the Turkish government, even though that genocide in Armenia happened more than 100 years ago, the Turkish government are still extremely sensitive about it and very defensive about it.
There's also the added aspect of Cyprus, and I'm surprised that hasn't come up more, you know, more overtly. I'm surprised that Israel hasn't done that yet, but I think that they should follow up with that one. But we've got only a few more moments, but I do want to quickly ask you about this Nakba terrorist who has been eliminated. What do we know about it?
Well, Israel has been systematically going after people in Gaza who were involved in the October the 7th and the events that followed that, especially holding of Israelis who were kidnapped and held in Gaza. And yesterday was a very significant moment when one of those Nakba terrorists, when one of those October the 7th terrorists was killed. And he was somebody who had held Israeli hostage Ron Baslavsky in captivity, not only in captivity, but treating him in the most evil possible way. And when we hear from Ron some of the evil treatment that he had to endure at the hands of this individual, then it's almost something that you can't envisage or believe, because the pure hatred and the pure evil just seems to have no boundaries. And there's a great video that shows Rom driving along in his car and receiving a call from the IDF on his phone while driving to tell him that this evil person has finally been eliminated. And Rom became extremely emotional and he said, hang on a second, I need to put my car down on the side of the road. I can't continue to drive. His emotions just started to build up and boil up, come out, because finally he feels that he has won. And that's exactly what he said. Now I can say 100% that I won. And then he went on to describe some of the things that this individual did to him, jumping on his neck when Rom was at his emotional lowest and his physically his weakest situation, a man of 100 kilograms jumping on another person's neck when he really is unable to, can hardly hold himself up because of his emotional and physical situation. And beyond that, the number of times that Rom said he almost died at his hands, was he could almost not count them. So a small victory, I think, for Rom and for Israel and for the IDF, who continue to go after these people and not allow them to rest until justice has been served, even though it is sort of the law of the jungle a little bit. This is the way that Israel is dealing with things. And I think that for the sake of those hostages like Rom, who are suffering so much from the way that these people treat them, I think it's just a little way of somehow helping them to get over their experiences.
That is where we leave it. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. 8:01, I'm Howard Feldman. We can catch Anthony tomorrow morning for the Israel Report at 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.